started here. So we're on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We're going to start from the end of the 15th line. So the Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Yuna Bar Shila, Hani Mirarisa Da Agma Adam Yotzei Bahani Dechavasu BePesach." The Gemara tells us that one can fulfill the obligation of Maror on Pesach by using bitter herbs that grow in the marsh, that grow in the swamp. So the Gemara asks, Meisve, Ezov, Velo Ezov Yon, Velo Ezov Kuchli, Velo Ezov Midbari, Velo Ezov Romi, Velo Ezov Sheyesh Lo Shem Levai. The Gemara cites a Mishnah from Masechet Parah that ostensibly has nothing at all to do with our Gemara. It's talking about Ezov. Ezov, as we mentioned already before, is hyssop. Hyssop is used in a variety of mitzvos, including Parah Aduma and Tahara Samitzora, and there are a whole slew of halachas that we're going to get into in a second regarding Ezov. And one of the halachos is that when you're using Ezov for a mitzvah, it has to just be plain Ezov. It can't be Ezov with any modifiers. It can't be Greek Ezov or Stibium Ezov or Roman Ezov or Desert Ezov or anything that's not just plain Ezov. So the question is, if that's true for Ezov for hyssop, why would we not do the same for maror? Why are we allowing you to be Yotze the mitzvah of maror by using maror, in other words, using mirarisa da agma, maror that grows in the swamp? Presumably that's a modification of regular maror. Why is that okay? So the Gemara gives two answers. Amar Abaye, Koshen Ishtana Shemo Kode Matan Torah Uvasa Torah Vehikpira Aleha Biyadua Sheyesh Lo Shem Levai Vahane Lo Nishtana Shemayu Kode Matan Torah Klaus. So one answer Abaye says is that the only time that using modified versions of an item is problematic is if the Torah prior to Matan Torah, the Torah specifies and says, okay, there's, five different species of Ezov, let's say, and then the Torah says you can only use this one, so then all the other modified versions are going to be problematic to use. When it comes to Maror, however, the Torah never made any such specification. The Torah says you can use anything that's qualified as a bitter herb, so it doesn't really make a difference if it grows in the swamp, if it grows somewhere else, everything qualifies as Maror. That's one answer. Rava Amar, the other possibility is that no, that maror also follows the same rules as Ezov. Really, modified maror should have been a problem. Rava says, this is not modified maror. Maror that grows in the swamp is regular maror. Why do we call it maror from the swamp? Because that's where it grows. But it's basically the same as regular maror. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chisda, Iged Bechad Lo Shmei Eged, Shalosh Shmei Eged, Shnayim Machlukas Rab Yosi V'Rabana. This not. Mitzvahs Ezov Shlosha klachem uvahen shlosha givolin. Rabbi Yossi Omer mitzvahs Ezov shlosha givolin ushiyarav shnayim v'gardumav kolshu. So everyone agrees that one stalk of Ezov is not called a bundle. That we already spoke about yesterday. Everyone also agrees that three stalks of Ezov is certainly a bundle. The machlokas in the Mishnah Maseches Para is, what about two stalks? The machlokas Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan. According to the Rabbanan, the Mishnah tells us that the mitzvah of Ezov, whatever, whichever mitzvah we're talking about that requires Ezov, so ideally you should be taking three stalks of Ezov, and each of those stalks should have one stem. So you should have a total of three stalks with a total of three stems. However, Rabbi Yossi says that that's lechadchila. Lechadchila, you should have three stalks. What if, let's say, one of the stalks got cut up or was removed or whatever? So Rabbi Yossi says that shiar of shnayim, that as long as you have a remainder of two full stalks, that's okay. And if you don't even have that, the Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Yossi, gardum of kolshu, you could have basically almost the entire stalk missing, as long as the stump of the hyssop remains, even any amount, that would also suffice. So the Gemara clarifies. Kasalka daitin midishiyar of shnayim trilasonami shnayim. So I would have thought that just as we said that as long as you have two stalks of hyssop remaining, that's okay for the mitzvah of Ezov. So presumably the same would be true for my initial starting point, meaning I can also start with two stalks, v'hai dekatani shlosha lemitzvah, and that which the Mishnah in Parah says I need three stalks, perhaps that's only a din lechachila. Umi de Rabbi Yossi shlosha lemitzvah, l'rabbanan shlosha la'akev. And by inference, we can say that if Rabbi Yossi was the one who said that three stalks of hyssop was just a din lechachila, so then the logical inference is that the Rabbanan that the Rabbanan will insist on three stalks even b'di'evid, that you need to have three stalks of hyssop no matter what. The problem with that formulation is the Hasanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ezov trilaso shnayim ushiyara vechad pasol, the Brisa seems to indicate the exact opposite, where Rabbi Yossi tells us that that when you start out with two stalks of Azov and you have, or you only have one stalk remaining, that's a problem. The only way it's going to be kosher, even b'di'eved, is if you start out with three stalks or if you have a remainder of two stalks. That's against the formulation we just said, because a second ago we just claimed that Rabbi Yossi held that the notion of requiring three stalks was only lechadchila. This brisa seems to indicate that Rabbi Yossi holds that you need three stalks even b'di'eved. To which the Gemara says, you're right, epach l'Rabbi Yossi shlosha la'akev l'Rabbanan shlosha l'mitzvah. The Gemara says, you're right, just reverse the shitos. In other words, you're right, Rabbi Yossi is the one who insists on three stalks of Azov even b'di'eved. The Rabbanan say, no, you can suffice with, in other words, three stalks is only lechadchila. And v'hasani, we have a corroborating brisa. Azov tchilaso shnai mushiyara vechad kasher, ve'eno pasol ache tchilaso ushiyara vechad. The Gemara says that when you have two, when you start out with two stalks, or you have one stalk of Azov remaining, so that's good, that's valid for the mitzvah of Azov. It's only going to be a problem if you either start out with one stalk, or you have one stalk remaining. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Shiara vechad pasol, ha'amar shiara vechad kasher. Didn't we just say a second ago that as long as you have one remaining stalk, that's okay? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela ima ache tehei tchilaso kishiyara vechad. It means that if your starting point was that you only started with one stalk, that's going to pose a problem. So again, at the end of the day, at the end of the Gemara, we assume that Rabbi Yossi requires three stalks of Azov even b'di'eved, whereas the Rabbanan say, no, that the three stalks is only required l'charchila, b'di'eved you can suffice with two, maybe you could have one remaining, maybe you could have even a stump of a stalk. Again, those are all the details that we mentioned before. Yeah, Billy, you have a question?
Rabbi, what's the basis? Because there are pasuk that says, well, akhta Azov. How do we know that isn't one?
It's a good question. I mean, that's really more of a Maseches Parah topic when the Mishnah is, you know, kind of describe all of the halachos and the details of Azov. So you have to kind of work out where all these dinim come from. They're presumably based on drushas from Sukkim. I don't think any of these are things that you would say, you know, that you would say on your own. Okay, the Gemara says Darash Mareimar Hani Yisriyasa the Sura Misakchin Behu Afagav the Ogdan Limin Yana Ba'almahu the Ogdan. So the Gemara now tells us that you can use reeds from Sura as schach, because even though they used to bundle reeds when they were selling them in surah, they would only do that for the purposes of counting. So it's like when you walk into a store, you want to buy X number of a certain item, so you want to know that you're getting that number of, you know, of things in the item that you're buying. So in surah, the only reason why they would bundle the reeds was simply so that you would know how many reeds there were in the bundle. So that's not a fundamental problem. Again, yesterday we spoke about not using bundles of schach. The Gemara says this doesn't really qualify as a bundle at all. Then the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Abba, Hani Tsrife Du'urbine, Kevan Shehutra Rashi Ma'adanim Shalohen Ksherin." The Gemara says, let's say you have a hut that you're using willow branches, using aravos, willow branches for the schach. So the Gemara says that's only going to be valid if you untie the ties on top of the willow branches. In other words, if the willow branches are not really together, they're basically just kind of flying all over the place, so then that's obviously going to be okay. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Why is that okay? You still have the willow branches tied on the bottom, so that should still qualify as a bundle. So the Gemara gives two answers. Amar of Papa, the Sharilu. One answer is, talk of the case is where you also untied them from the bottom. So in other words, the first answer is Enechanami, that if they're tied at all, then the willow branches will not be valid for Schach. The other answer is, Amar of Hunabere, the Rav Yehoshua, Filu Tema, Delo Sharilu, Kol Eged Shenu, also the other possibility is that even if they remain tied on the bottom, they're still valid as chach. Why? Because the Gemara tells us that if it's not an eged that enables you to carry the willow branches, it's not really called an eged. Why? Because if your willow branches are only tied on one side, there's no way you're going to be able to carry them very far. They're just going to start falling all over the place. They're very loosely bound together. So the Gemara says that doesn't qualify as an eged, and therefore it's not going to invalidate the willow branches as chach. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Shmuel, Yerakos Sha'amru Chacham Mimadam Yotze Boheni Dechavasu Bepesach, Mevien Esatuma, Ve'en Chutzitzin Befnei Atuma, Ufoslin Besukam Yishum Avir. The Gemara gives us three halachos of this almost like intersection between Maror and Sukkah. The Gemara says, any vegetable that's valid for the mitzvah of Maror, so first of all, those vegetables can become Tameh, because we know that there's a Dindo Raisa derived from Sukkim and Parsha Shmini of Tumas Ochlin. So anything which qualifies as food, assuming that it's at least the size of a kibetza, is makabel tuma, can potentially become tame. The other halacha, which is kind of related to this, is that it also cannot act as a barrier to prevent tuma from spreading. Certain things, if you have an item which is not makabel tuma, it can prevent tuma from spreading to other things. If the item itself is makabel tuma, then obviously it cannot prevent tuma from spreading anywhere. And the third halacha, which is more directly relevant to our Gemara, is that if I use maror as schach, that's actually going to be problematic as airspace. Now again, if you have pasul schach, as long as you have less than three tfachim at a time, we can rely on the principle of lavud. when you have airspace, airspace, in other words, blank airspace in your schach is actually worse in a sense than pasul schach. If you have more than three tfachim of airspace, that's much worse, that you can't actually sleep under, and it actually invalidates the entire schach. Why are we treating the maror as if it's airspace? In other words, it's still there, I'm still putting it up as schach. So the Gemara says, my taima, keva de lechiyav she parche v'naflei kaman de lesen hu dame, because eventually the maror is going to dry up, it's going to wither, and then it's just going to fall down and collapse, so it's kiilu as if it was never there in the first place. Fine. And the Gemara says, v'amar Rabbi Abba, amar Rav Huna, habotzer legas ein lo yados, v'rav Menashe bar Gad, amar Rav Huna, hakotzer l'schach ein lo yados. The Gemara quotes two halachos here that relate to the concept of yados. Yados in the realm of Tuma is basically the entire theme of Maseches Uktin, the last Mishnah in Shas, which basically describes the concept of Tuma being conducted or spread from handles, from stems, things of that nature. So the Gemara quotes two halachos that are along these lines. The first is that if I'm harvesting grapes for the purposes of bringing them to the wine press to make it into wine, so the Gemara tells us that those stems do not conduct tumah. Meaning to say, even if the stems were to become tummy somehow, the grapes would remain impervious from tumah, and I could still make it into wine without a problem. That's one halacha. The other halacha that's cited by Rav Menashe is that if I'm harvesting grain for the purpose of using the chaff or the straw for schach, so the grain also is not a conductor. It's not acting as a yad, as a handle, to conduct the tumah to the grain itself. So the Gemara explains, Manda amar kotzer, kol shekein botzer, delo nechale, delo nimtzie, lechamre. So the Shita, in other words, the second opinion of the Gemara of Menashe, who only cited the halacha in the context of harvesting grain for schach, that there is no conducting tumah through the grain. So he would say that the halacha certainly applies in the first case of harvesting the grapes. Why? Because you don't want the stems there. If you're producing wine, the stems are going to simply absorb all the wine that you want to produce. So you clearly don't want the stems there. Therefore, the stems are not going to act as a conductor of tumah. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Manda amar botzer she'en lo yados, but the first daya in the Gemara, in other words, the Shita that said, the Shita of Rabbi Abba, that only cited the halacha that when I harvest grapes for the wine press, then there's no tumah in the stems, so that would be a unique halacha by the grapes. It would not extend to the case of the grain for schach. Why not? Because one could argue that when I'm harvesting the grain, in other words, again, my primary intention is to take the straw, the chaff, and use that for schach. But that's not to say that I don't necessarily also want the grain, because the grain is going to help me hold the chaff in place. If I just put chaff on top of the sukkah, it's very likely going to fly off. So by having the grain itself, I'm almost going to weigh down the chaff and keep it on top of my sukkah. So in that sense, you can argue that you do want the grain, and if you do want the grain, then the halachas of tumah are going to kick in again. And now, all of a sudden, that can act as a conductor for tumah as well. So the Gemara now further clarifies. Nima de Rav Menashe bar Gada Tanahi. The Gemara wants to suggest that this statement of Rav Menashe, again, he was commenting about harvesting the grain, you want to use the chaff for schach, that it's not makabal, that the stems are not makabal tumah. So the Gemara says, maybe this is really subject to a machlokas. Tisanya, sochi te'enem uvahen te'enem, parchilu vahen anavim, kashin uvahen shibalim, mechadus uvahen temarin, kulan imsolas meruba al ha'ochling shera avim lav psula, acherim omrim atche yuhu kashin meruben al ha'yados ve'al ha'ochling. So we have a machlokas about the following scenario. So you have either you have your fig tree with figs on it, or a grapevine with grapes on it, or a palm tree with dates. Again, all these different cases, or you have stalks with grain on it. So the question is, do we invoke the concept, as we keep on mentioning, of yados, that the stems or the stalks are going to conduct tumah to the food itself? So it's a machlokas in this brisa. According to the Tanakam, according to the Chachamim, so they say the only way that you're going to have valid schach here is if you have what's called psolas meruba al ha'ochel, if the chaff, if the bad stuff, the stuff that you would otherwise be using as schach, that's not really food, it's not edible, if that outweighs or outnumbers the food, so then you're fine, then that's valid schach, and it's not going to be makabel tumah. But in the opposite case, if the food outweighs or outnumbers the psolas, the chaff, then it's a problem. However, Acherim say no. Acherim say it's not enough that the psoles just outweighs or outnumbers the food. It also has to outweigh or outnumber the yados, the handles, the stems, the stalks of the food as well. So the Gemara says, "My lav b'hakam miflagei demar savar yesh lahen yados, demar savar ein lahen yados." Presumably, this is the very machlokas that we were just discussing. Namely, do we cite the principle of yados in this context? Do we say that these stalks, that these stems, whatever it is, are essentially a conductor of tumah to the food or not? So the Gemara says, "L'Rabbi Abba Vaday Tanahi, L'Rabbi Menashe Bar Gada Mi Lema Tanahi." The Gemara says, according to Rabbi Abba, again, Rabbi Abba was the one who we thought only cited the halacha in the context of harvesting grapes for wine, but he never cited this halacha in the context of harvesting grain for schach. So in other words, according to Rabbi Abba, there's certainly a machlokes as to whether yados will apply here. But the question is, according to Rav Menashe Bar Gada, who did cite the halacha in the context of harvesting the grain for the schach, so the Gemara says maybe there's no machlokes. Maybe according to him, everyone agrees that there is no such thing as yados in these contexts. Because if there was, then the schach would be makabel tumah, and if it's makabel tumah, then you can't use it as schach. So the Gemara says, Amar lecha Rav Menashe, dechulei al masavrei hakotzer l'schachin lo yados. Rav Menashe says everyone agrees that when you're harvesting the grain for schach, that there's no yados, it's not going to conduct tuma at all. V'hacha b'mayaskinan could go shekotzitzon la'achila v'nimlach aleha l'sikach. The case was where you initially harvested the grain with the intent of eating it, and then you change your mind and decide to use it for schach. That's the case that Rav Menashe says where there's going to be yados, where the grain will potentially be makabel tuma. So the Gemara asks, ikotzitzon la'achila ma'itamayu derabanan. But if you're harvesting it for the purpose of eating it, then why would the rabbanan disagree? Then obviously there should certainly be yados in this case. What's the machlok? So the Gemara says, "V'chi tema kasavri rabbanan kevan de nimlach alein l'sikach bala lemachashavto." Maybe the rabbanan will hold that once you've changed your mind and now decided to use the grain for schach, all of a sudden you've overridden your previous intention, and now all of a sudden it's just regular schach and it should not be mekabel tuma. The Gemara says, "But that's not true." Umi bala lemachshava b'chi. Is that thought process enough to override your previous thought process that you wanted to use this grain as food? The Hasnan, the Mishnah in Kalim tells us, "Kol haKalim yordin li deituma b'machshava ve'in olin mitumas and ela b'shinui ma'isa ma'isa motzi miyad ma'isa miyad machshava machshava ina motzia lo miyad ma'isa ve'lo miyad machshava." It's a very famous Mishnah in Kalim. The Mishnah tells us that. Let's say, for example, I have a kli. Now, we know that in order for a kli to be mekabel tuma, it needs to be a fully functional kli. It needs to meet a certain level of functionality. If I have a three-legged chair that can't stand on its own, the chair is not mekabel tuma. It's not a fully formed, fully functional kli. So let's say, for example, I have a type of a kli that has different stages to it. So let's say if I'm a shoemaker, this bench would already be done. But if I was, a guy who tanned hides, so then I would need to process and develop this kli, this bench even further, you know, for the purposes that I needed it. So the Gemara says that, the Mishnah Kalim says it depends what the purpose is. So let's say, for example, initially I wanted to make this bench into a much more complex kli. I wanted to make it into a bench that would be used for a tanner. So that requires a lot more processing than a bench for a shoemaker, just for argument's sake. So in that case, the Mishnah says that basically, you can change your thought process in the middle. So let's say, as you're building it, you've already hit the point where the bench is fit for a shoemaker, but it's not yet fit for a tanner. And then you decide, you know what, I just want to use it as a shoemaker's bench. So now, all of a sudden, that bench is now makabel tuma, because you've changed your mind. So that machshava can kind of flip the switch. But the opposite would not be the case. In other words, let's say you initially wanted to make it into a shoemaker's bench, and then you decided to process it further and make it into a tanner's bench, let's say, then that's not enough. The machshava alone is insufficient. You need to have a real maisa. You have to do something physical, something to the actual bench to indicate that you're changing its status. And the way the Mishnah basically paraphrases this is that a maisa, an action, can override a previous maisa or a previous machshava, but a machshava alone is insufficient to override even just a regular machshava. So the question is, in other words, I can't just say, oh, before I wanted to use the grain as food, and now I want to use it as schach. That's not going to work. Because again, in other words, just a machshava alone is not enough to flip the switch. You need to do some kind of a maisa. So the Gemara clarifies even further. V'chi tema hani nile kelim dachashiv. Maybe you'll argue as follows, that halacha, that Mishnah in Kalim that says that a machshava is not enough to override a machshava, maybe that's only for Kalim. Kalim are really chashav. But here, you're talking about a yados, you're talking about the handle, the stem of a stalk of grain. Perhaps machshava would have been sufficient to override its previous status and to say that, you know, in other words, that I initially harvested it as food, but now I simply want to use it as chach. Maybe that would work. The Gemara says that's also not true. V'hasnan kol yados ha'ochlin shebesasan begoren tohoros. We'll get back to the parentheses in a second. The Mishnah in Uktzin tells us that whenever you have a handle on food, in other words, you have a yad, a stem, a handle on food. So the Mishnah says if you're besasan begoren, again, we'll see you in a second what that word besasan means. It's going to be important to understanding the Gemara. If you're besasan in the granary, then the food becomes tar. What does that mean? Bishlam alamanda amar besasan hitir agudan shapir el alamanda amar my besasan besasan ma'amish ma'ikal lemar. There's a machlokas had. In other words, just how to translate the word besasa. If you think the word besasa means that you're simply untying the bind that's holding the grain together, that's not really called an action. So that would make a lot of sense. That's why the Mishnah says that if I simply untie the bind that surrounds the stalk of grain, that's enough to make it tar. That would be a proof that our distinction is in fact correct. Namely, that the idea that a machshava is insufficient to override a previous machshava is only true for something on the caliber of a kli. But for something as insignificant as a yados of stalks of grain, you can argue that a machshava perhaps would suffice. But that would only make sense if you understand the word besasan as simply untying the bind, not as a real action. But if you think the word besasan means that you actually trampled upon the grain, you did a real maisa, so then the Mishnah in Uktzin would seem to imply that you need a real maisa even to override a machshava, even for something as insignificant as the stalks of the grain, even though it's not really a kli. So the Gemara says, you're right. Hachanam yisha besasan mamish. The case here as well is when you literally trampled upon it. In other words, you really did a maisa. So the Gemara says, but if that's the case, yachi maitamayu da'achirim. So then why do achirim disagree? If you did a real maisa, then you should certainly be able to override the previous intention. In other words, before I wanted the grain to be food, now I trampled upon it, so I'm clearly indicating I want it to be schach. Why would anyone disagree? Why would anyone think that it's still makabel tuma? So the Gemara says, Domer kerab yosi, disnan rab yosi metavi. That was the other daya in the Mishnah and Uks, and the Gemara put in parentheses before that Rab Yosi happens to disagree. Rab Yosi says that even if you're doing a maisa on the stalks of grain, it's still not going to work. It's still going to be food, and therefore the schach will be makabel tuma, and there's no way to use it. So the Gemara says, hi, my, what's the case here? Bishlama hasam taima de Rab Yosi chazia, lecha de Rab Shimon ben Lakish, Domer Rab Shimon ben Lakish, holu ruyos lehovchan be eser, elohacha lemai chazia. The Gemara says, at least over there, in the case of the grain in the granary and the stalks of grain in the granary, you can argue that the chaff does have some function. What function does it have? Because when you're overturning the grain with a pitchfork, you can line the prongs of the pitchfork with straw to prevent the grain from falling to the ground. So even the chaff, which you normally throw away, does have some use there. So you can argue that it makes sense that the chaff would act as a yad to conduct tumah to the grain. But what about here by the schach? What functionality does the grain have? In other words, you're not using the grain for anything. You want to only use the chaff as chach. So the Gemara says, no. Chazya l'chi sasar l'minkat l'hu begilayu. When you're going to dismantle the schach, it's going to be easier if you grab it by the stem. In other words, because it'll be easier to throw it off of the sukkah. If you're simply holding on by the chaff, as we said, the chaff is very airy, just flies all over the place, it'll be a lot harder to remove it. Okay, then the Gemara says, gufa, kol yados ha'ochlin shebesasan begorin tohoros v'rab yosi mitami. So again, the same achokas that we just quoted from the Mishnah in Uktzin. So my besasan, what does that word besasan mean? Rabbi Yochanan Omar Besasan Mamish, Rabbi Elazar Omar Hitaragdin. Again, either it means to trample or it means to untie the bind around the grain. Bishlamal Rabbi Elazar Omar Besasan Hitaragdin, Hainu Dimitami Rabbi Yosi. So according to Rabbi Elazar, who said that all you did was untie the bind around the grain, that I understand why Rabbi Yosi says that it's still Matami because you didn't do anything to it. It still has its status as food. Elul Rabbi Yochanan Omar Besasan Mamish, Amai Matami Rabbi Yosi. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, you trampled on the grain. You did a real action. Why would Rabbi Yosi say that the grain is Matame? So Omar as we just pointed out in the previous Gemara, since you can use the chaff to line the prongs of your pitchfork when you're picking up and you're winnowing all of the grain, therefore that still has functionality, and therefore it's going to be makabel tuma. And the Gemara ends off with a little machshava here. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lama nimshla tefilasan shel tzadikim ke'aser. Why do we compare the tefillah of tzadikim to a pitchfork? Lo mar lecha ma'aser zeh mahapeches hatfuah begoren mimakom lemakom av tefilasan shel tzadikim mahapeches daito shel hakadosh baruch hu mimidach a pitchfork, you overturn the grain, you pick it up and turn it over. So too, the tefillah of tzaddikim is meant to overturn Hashem's mind, so to speak, from cruelty to rachmanas.